Guess we could call this the early service. We welcome you today. We have college students with us and had some last Sunday as well. We welcome them for a little break from their studies. We're glad that they're here today as well. I'd like to add to our list, in addition to Kathy's mother, Havana Thomas was in the hospital at Chippingham for a day or so. She was scheduled to come home yesterday. She has pneumonia, and I'm sure the family would appreciate your praying for her. Want to encourage you to sign up for the teacher's breakfast. That's coming up rapidly. It's March the 25th on a Saturday morning. Breakfast will be catered, and we ask you to sign up. We have some already who have, but we have others who need to. Please sign up and be a part of the teacher's breakfast. We have Adam Davis who will be coming to encourage us to speak on that occasion. I also want to remind you, on Sunday nights, we have been having some studies from the book of Genesis, and tonight it will be, how do we know the stories, the early ones in Genesis 1 through 11, how do we know that they are historically literal, that they are accurate? I'll give five or six reasons tonight as to why you can count on that being true. For those of you who were born in the mid-1990s and later, you have spent almost the entirety of your life experiencing a technological explosion. In my day and my time, television was a big thing. I can remember when we didn't have it and when people began to have televisions in their homes and then later cable television. For those who are even older, you'll remember the advent and the introduction of radio. And we thought that those were amazing pieces of technology. But that was nothing compared to what we're seeing now. It is tremendous in its power, in its use, that we can avail ourselves of it for good, but also it has a potential for evil as well. The first text message for the hearing impaired was sent in 1992. Texting was not widely used until the year 2000. And email occurred first in 1971, became popular in use around 1995. Facebook, 2004, Twitter, 2006, Instagram, 2010. As you can see, all of these are relatively new pieces of technology. I'm mentioning this today because all of this has an effect upon our lives. This is another life lesson from last Sunday, because we can learn things about it and about life and about how to live and not allow some of these new inventions to adversely affect us in our lives. I read this week a note that a husband emailed to his wife. He wrote this: "Dear wife, I'm sending you this email to bring you up to date on the events of our family. I tried to talk to you while you were on the computer, but you just kept telling me that you would BRB, whatever that means. So I decided to send you this email. BTW, BRB means be right back. John Jr. cut his first tooth today. By the way, he's the one you bounce on your knee while typing and surfing the internet. Susie had her first date Saturday night. She had a good time and said to thank you for letting them use your car. She put the keys back on the key rack underneath the cobwebs where she found them. Tim is playing football. He looks forward to going to school now that he has a sport to play. He wants to know if you would come to one of his games if we bought you a laptop to bring along. Let's see, what else is new since I last wrote to you 3 months ago? Well, the refrigerator had to be replaced. The dog died of old age. And the church has a new minister. And did I tell you that I have a new job? Well, I think that's about it. I'll email you again in about 3 months. Take care of yourself, honey. We all miss you very much. And we'll see you the next time the power goes off. Love, husband. Well, that may be exaggerated a bit, and it could have been written, of course, as well from the wife to the husband or to young people as well. I read this week from a senior writer of Desiring God, Tony Rank. He said, "Why are we so prone to click on our phones before we do almost anything else?" I thought of six possible reasons, he wrote, which came out of analyzing my own heart and my own temptations. And so he gave these six reasons in two groups of why we are so prone to go to our phones the very first thing. Three of these, he called them candy motives. And the last three, avoidance motives. Here are his reasons. The novelty candy motive is this, that we simply love to hear new things. We want to know what's new in the world, what's going on among our friends. What happened since we last glanced at the world? Most of us like to be the first one to know, and we want to be the first to tell. And so we have this posture of being the first to know that makes us seem smart or savvy, or we're the on-the-ball people. And then maybe we can assume the role of being the informer instead of the poor, benighted people that need to be informed about what happened in our world, and smart enough that they would have been on the social media earlier. So there's the new thing candy, the novelty candy that entices us. And then there's the ego candy. What people have said about us, what are they writing about us the last time we checked? Who has taken note of us? Who has retweeted us? Who mentioned us or liked us or followed us? In our fallen, sinful condition, there's an inordinate enjoyment of the human ego being attended to. Some of us are weak enough, wounded enough, and fragile enough, insecure enough, then any little mention of us feels good. He wrote, "It seems like someone kissed us." And then there's another candy motive. It's called entertainment. On the internet, there is an endless stream of fascinating and even weird, strange, wonderful, shocking, spellbounding things. Cute pictures of animals, quotes, videos, stories. It's entertaining. And most of us now are almost addicted to the need of something striking and bizarre and extraordinary and amazing. And so here are these three candy motives of novelty, new things, ego, and entertainment. But there are three more. And there are avoidance motives. He listed these. Boredom avoidance. We wake up in the morning and the day in front of us looks boring. There's nothing exciting coming our way, little incentive to get up and get out of bed. And nothing the human soul hates worse than a vacuum, nothing to do, boredom. Isn't it amazing that young people feel bored? They're young, healthy in most cases, energetic, brilliant, alive, all kinds of opportunities abound, and yet they say they're bored. They reach for these devices because this way they can avoid boredom. And then there's a responsibility avoidance. All of us have responsibilities. We're employers, employees. We're fathers, we're mothers, we're students, we're teachers. And we have all of these coming at us. First thing we wake up in the morning and we think about all of these responsibilities. Life is filled with weighty responsibilities, and often we feel inadequate to face them. And so there's the phone, the smartphone, and the iPad, and the internet. And it helps us to avoid responsibilities. And there's another avoidance. It's called hardship avoidance. It may be that your particular case in life, things are hard. Not just boredom, not just responsibility, but the life is becoming very difficult for you. It may be because of economic issues. It may be relational conflicts. It may be because you don't feel well because of disease of your body. It may be because of conflict with friends and what they're writing and saying about you. And so it's hard just to get up in the morning because of difficulties that you're about to face. And so there are six reasons, three candy motives that attract us, and three things that are repulsive to us that we want to avoid. And therefore we turn to these devices. The writer then turns to Scripture and tells us some of the Psalms and what they say about what we need to do in the morning. Mornings are important in Scripture. When I was in South Korea over the last few trips that I made, I was told by the people there that the South Koreans love very much to get up early in the morning. When our classes would start at 9 o'clock in the morning, often the older members would come sometimes after 8, at least by 8:30. And they would enter into the classroom to pray. And especially the older people, they loved the early morning hours. Listen to what the psalmist said. Psalms 5, verse 3, O Lord, in the morning you hear my voice. That is, he's praying to God. In the morning I prepare a sacrifice for you and watch. Psalms 12, verse 1, at least we should cry out in the morning, I love you, I need you. Help, Lord. That's what the psalmist said in Psalms 12. This is the first cry, or should be, out of our mouths in the morning. I need you today. I'm going to prepare a sacrifice for you. No, not an animal sacrifice, but a living sacrifice of your life in devotion. Psalms 143, verse 8, I watch for the Lord to show up and to do what? What am I watching for? The psalmist said, let me hear in the morning of your steadfast love. For in you I trust. Make me know the way I should go, for to you I lift up my soul. Psalms 90, verse 14. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all of our days. Psalms 119, 148. My eyes are awake before the watches of the night, that I may meditate on your promise. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they're more than the sand. If I awake, I am still with you. All of these are expressions about the value of the morning and what we should do first thing in the morning. Recently, my friend, one you well know as well, Tommy South, presented a message at Glen Allen. And he talked first about how that there are tremendous advantages to all of this social media. But he also warned that there's a dark side. In fact, a very dark side. Social media are used to promote riots, anarchy, and rebellion. It's used to spread rumors and lies. It is even used to plan terrorist acts against innocent people. It's used for bullying and for pornography. It's a playground for sexual predators. It's a tool for thieves, for scammers. We could say that there is a very dark side to this social media, this internet business. Did you know that there are two internets? Maybe I shouldn't tell you. There's the normal one that we use, and this is bad enough. But there's one called the dark internet. The dark web. It has some beneficial uses, I understand. Those in countries like North Korea, Communist China, or Russia, where they are watched, their every move accounted for, and the internet use strictly limited. They can go on the dark web because you use encryptions that are coded, and they can transfer messages and images and plan things, and it's very difficult for them to be caught. There are all sorts of illegal things being done on the dark internet, on the deep web. There are all kinds of ugly things down there. Let me tell you about a Greek myth that has come down to our day known as Pandora's Box. The ancient Greeks, 7th century B.C., read some epic poems by Hesiod, in which he appropriated the story about Pandora. In case you don't know, Pandora in Greek mythology was a beautiful woman that was made by Zeus, the high god of the Greeks. They had 12 other gods, major gods under Zeus. But Zeus is the major, the high god. And because Prometheus stole the fire and gave it to man for his use, he decided to curse mankind by giving them this beautiful but devious woman, Pandora. And he had her made, hammered out of the earth, and sent down to plague man by her seduction. She stayed with them when things were going well and there was plenty, and then she forsook mankind when things got difficult. And there was a box that Zeus sent down to earth. In some translations, it's called a coffin. In others, the imagery is that of an earthen jar that they used to hide things in the ground. And Pandora, because of her insatiable curiosity, seeing the box, as we now call it, could not resist it. And so she opened the box. She loosened the lid. And all sorts of evil things came out of the box to plague mankind. There was only one thing left inside. And Pandora trapped it and wouldn't let it come out. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. Pandora's box has been opened. And we live in a very challenging time as Christians. How do we who are born in the midst of this advanced technology put Christ first? In a world where the lid has been loosened and everything has spewed out, and I mean everything, how do we keep our focus? How do we concentrate upon what is good instead of what is evil? Some people now are instead of calling this social media, they're calling it unsocial media. We have become so deceived by it that we think it makes us social and more sociable. In fact, it does right the opposite. Have you ever noticed people standing around and They don't even notice one another. They're so busy on the social media that they neglect the people who are right there with them face to face. It's not social anymore. It's unsocial. When does it become that? This is what Tommy South said. It becomes unsocial when you think you cannot live without it. Paul said, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of anything. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12. It becomes unsocial and unchristian when you fall prey to its power and you become addicted by it. Number two, it becomes unsocial when you use it to promote falsehood and lies about people. The wise man said, a false witness breathes out lies. Chapter 6 of Proverbs, verse 19. Instead of breathes out, we could insert in that passage, forwards. I get them. Sometimes I have to respond to them and say, what you sent to me is false. It's not even true. It becomes unsocial when you use it to spread gossip. You can gossip on electronic media just as well as you can verbally. And people do it all the time. And by the way, it takes two to gossip. It takes one who says it, who forwards it, and one who listens to it. And when someone sends you something that is ugly and out of place and nothing but to hurt and harm others, you should shut it down. You ever heard of befriending? It becomes unsocial when you use it to injure others, whether you intend to or not. The passage I read a moment ago in Matthew 12 said, every idle word that you shall speak, you shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. It becomes unsocial when you try to hide behind it. Even Facebook is often faceless. We hide behind it. How do you use this tremendous power, this technology that we have? How are you using it? Is it consuming your life? Is it keeping you even from worship? You're in the building, but you're not here. And you have it beside you, and your eyes are cutting over toward it, and someone is sending you something, but you're not seeing it. You're not paying attention. You're not worshiping God. You're making a mockery of the Christ who died for the church. I wanted to tell you the rest of the story of Pandora. Beautiful woman made by Zeus, who, because of her curiosity, opened the lid on the box. And all of these ills escaped into the world to plague mankind simply because Prometheus gave beneficial fire to man to use. And when she tried to put the lid back on and to shut it up, there was one thing that she trapped inside. Do you know the story? Do you know what it is? In this ancient Greek myth, what she trapped inside was one little evil creature that she thought was evil. It had a name. And the name of that creature inside is hope. Isn't that amazing that what Pandora did was to trap hope in the box, the only thing she could? And so hope is kept from us because of the evil that has been dispersed abroad in the land. Have you fallen prey to Pandora's evil? How are you using this powerful medium, for good or for evil? This is a life lesson. It has everything to do about how we live. It affects all of us, young and old, middle age, men and women alike. Even those who are tremendously young, they're already addicted to it. And it is hindering their participation in the kingdom of God, and even in being social with other people. We always come and we sing and we worship. And we do so in a serious vein, so that we might honor the God of heaven and earth, not Zeus. Pandora is a myth. And yet the evil that has been spread in this world is not. It is real. And it's affecting all of us. We are encouraged to flee from it and to grasp hope that has been given to us through Christ the Lord. It is to Him that we invite you to come while we stand and sing together.